So, I want to hear some of your music shortly, but how would you describe your sound before we do?
Wow. If you're going to be playing some of the things that I think you're going to be playing, then there are a variety of different hacked, I guess you could say, toys, video game machines that I process through the computer or control using the computer is a better way to put it.
From a dot in the middle of the map, this is Midwesternish. I'm Gina Kaufman. What do you picture when I say conservatory of music? Pianos, violins, brass in padded rooms? Do you hear Beethoven and Mozart echoing down hallways? Or do you see a guy sitting behind a computer screen? For the first time ever, the University of Missouri in Kansas City's revered music composition program has admitted a student whose instrument is a computer. That student is Tim Hart.
Talk to me about your relationship with music. Did it start with the computer or did it evolve to being a computer-based thing?
It evolved into being a computer-based thing, but I think it took time for me to recognize that I was even using a computer at all.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it was always in the background. For a long time, it was the cheapest way for me to be able to record.
So were you thinking of it as like a stand-in tool for a time before you were seeing it as, wait, no, this is what I use. This is my instrument.
Kind of. I mean, there was all kinds of things that I was learning about as I was using the computer but not recognizing them as being an instrument, because the whole time I was like chopping up whatever I was working on and editing and splicing and turning one instrument into something else using the computer, but I just didn't recognize that that was something that could be like a viable instrument.
We hear a piece of music on a piano, most of us can picture what the musician is doing to make the sounds we hear. They're like, you know, fingers on black and white keys, and when they pound on those, a sound comes out. When we hear a song like Signs, what would be the analogy? I mean, how are these sounds made?
I really like that song as an example. It wasn't the one I was expecting, but that one was really funny because I was trying to come up with a way to really, really use the computer to do what I wanted to. So I had an idea of a piece or a sound slowing down and then speeding up. And so I set a series of limits on a set of sine waves, and then...
So it's a sine, like S-I-N-E.
Yes, a sine wave, yes. And basically I hit play and it output everything, all those sounds you hear right there, into about 11 seconds. The whole song itself is probably about 8 or 9 minutes, if I remember right, but it output it all into about 11 seconds, and then I had to kind of like shape it and temper it to be able to do what I wanted to. So really that was just kind of a raw data in the beginning.
Well, that's interesting because it sounds like what makes this sound is math.
A lot of it is. With that one too, there's actually, I mean, if you think about that one, the way that I think about it, there's actually three instruments, and one of them is represents the spectrum of sound. So it starts from a fundamental pitch. I think it was like B flat. And then it sends out a series of other sine waves that are generated as smaller segments of that B flat. In each segment being a different note. So in that way, it is math. And then there's two other instruments which are also composed of sine waves. One of them is like a natural tuning that we're used to, and then another one is just a quarter tone higher than that. And there's all kinds of different shaping and Yeah.
You're referring to tuning in tones as instruments. I mean, as things we're used to. But I think for people who have never programmed music on a computer or who have never programmed on a computer, period, this is all still really abstract. I mean, how would the process you just described compare to, I mean, I don't know if you're able to answer this, but like if you were composing for, say, a piano and a guitar and a drum.
I really don't think it's that much different, at least not to me. I think that in some way, like if you're in a band, then you have like a communication. So the drum to a guitar player is kind of foreign, or you say, I've got this idea for a beat, and then you let the drummer really like rock it out. But for me in that situation, I already knew what my instruments were going to be. I wanted to have this harmonic spectrum generator at the center, and then I wanted to have two other sets of sine waves. So in that way, I don't think it's any different than, you know, whoever, like Beethoven or somebody was like, I've got a bunch of violins over here and I want them to do this. And then there's another set of violins over here and I want them to do that.
On a lot of the albums you've put out, you call yourself Dungeon Master, which I would say, and I'll acknowledge I know you a little socially, so I have a hint at this already, but I mean, it seems like a reference to Dungeons and Dragons.
It is, yeah.
So between computer as instrument and references to things like Dungeons and Dragons, you seem to gravitate toward a kind of inspiration that maybe Beethoven wouldn't have recognized.
I don't know. Maybe he would have liked Dungeons and Dragons.
He might have liked it, but he didn't know about it.
That's true. It's a funny little nickname that my friends started calling me that because I was their dungeon master and also was arranging music. And so they would be like, that's my dungeon master. And, you know, they would
Can you explain what a dungeon master is?
Dungeon master is the person that sits on the other side of a book and invents a story that a bunch of other player characters roll dice and try to augment.
So the dungeon master is kind of like the composer of people and a story that they're making.
Yeah, and we're going to play tonight. 3 years going, and we're ending the quest hopefully soon.
Let's hear another example of your music. This one is called Cicadas. Okay, what are all the little sounds we're hearing that are kind of reminiscent when put all together of cicadas, but maybe digital cicadas?
Well, that's what it was. Last year was the year of the 17-year cicada, and that's actually a collaborative project between me and my friend Sean Pruden, a.k.a. Young Sean. Check him out. It all came from cicadas. We were sitting around outside recording them and then watching them on all sorts of data gathering devices, oscilloscopes and spectrum generators and that kind of thing, and then tried to recreate them in a harmonic way. So the instruments themselves are tiny little noise samples that are chopped and gated to be able to play quickly. And then there's also a Sega Genesis in there that was hacked up to make all those little like melodic sounds you heard. And then there's the second controller slot, which is an actual piece of hardware that changes MIDI data into machine code that the Sega Genesis can then read on the disc that's in the cartridge. So then the third stage is actually the computer where I write out all the notes, like, you know, on a stave. And in this case, a lot of it was done through MIDI.
So people who are listening, I mean, for me, I am not someone who uses a computer to do anything other than like the bare minimum that I need it to. I don't necessarily understand how the computer is doing what I'm asking it to, because I don't need to understand that. So a lot of people are probably listening. They're like me and don't totally know what it is you're saying, but can pick up on the idea that you are doing something fairly complex and cerebral. Is that something that has come naturally to you, or is that kind of a deliberate philosophy?
I think it was a philosophy that I tried to avoid for a long time, and then I eventually embraced it.
What is that philosophy?
That everything can be an instrument, and that I want to be a composer, so I have to do that with the tools that are available.
Tim isn't the only one up to this kind of thing. Coming up, another musician records the sound of dead leaves to write something he calls Death's Thin Melody. But first, let me tell you about a handy little tool you could use to listen to our podcast. I know it's hard to keep up with all the amazing content from your public radio station and NPR, but that's why we've got NPR One. It's like Pandora, but for your radio. NPR One streamlines your public radio experience. You can even use it to listen to Midwesternish. Get it now from your app store. Okay, so where were we? I believe I just promised to play you a song made out of the sound of dead leaves. That's coming, but let's get back to Tim Hart's audition for the composition program at the UMKC Conservatory. Paul Rudy is a professor of music composition, and he was at Tim's audition. He was there to evaluate whether this guy should be admitted into the program. Paul, what were your thoughts during the audition?
Yeah, sure. It was totally unique from anything we've ever experienced before. He basically brought in a couple of well-used laptops, networked them together, was setting up some custom-made devices that he had built himself. By the time he had gotten everything set up, though, I had a clear sense that he knew his instrument well, not just because he had learned it, but because he had built it himself.
People have been making music with computers for a long time. I actually was looking for articles on this and found like a very exciting article. I was thrilled to have found it. It was from Scientific American. It turns out it was from 1985. Why is this change just now making waves at the conservatory?
Because it's called a conservatory. There is a historical tradition and practice that has guided the conservatory, not just our conservatory, but all schools of music, that is well-rooted in a long, long-standing practice. And those things are hard to change. And it takes, to me, it takes compelling students like Tim who clearly have mastery of something that falls outside of our established categories. And so to me, maybe he's the first one because he's kind of the perfect combination of a student who's got already got a mastery, but not in what we have to offer. So I'm going to be learning from Tim, and that's the other cool thing about this. I have no idea how he does most of what he does. The computer is a vast instrument. There's so many different ways it can be used. Most of us hear most of the music we get probably through electronics of some kind. It's vast. I can't keep up with it. I have my own practice, but
which we'll talk about pretty soon. But,
yeah.
But I want to ask you another conservatory question,
sure.
Which is that I have heard that the conservatory approach to jazz is still based in a model for classical music education, which is, you know, obviously the roots of a conservatory, and that there's kind of a leftover challenge for jazz musicians in conservatories because classical music and jazz they're not just different in how they sound, they're also different in how they're made. I wonder if you see an analogy possibly here. I mean, do you anticipate there being those kinds of tensions as computers enter the program?
Possibly. Although I don't see tensions, I see opportunities for dialogue on how we can become more diverse. Diversity is a big issue right now, and racial diversity is part of that. But to me, aesthetic diversity is a more important question.
I want to hear some more music, but this time we're going to listen to Paul's music, because Paul, you also are a composer who works with the computer.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Talk to me about your use of the computer and maybe how it differs from Tim's.
Well, it doesn't actually a lot, except that I don't build my own computer instruments like he does. I just realized, thinking about this show, actually, that 80% of the music I perform now is actually performed on my laptop. So it's actually become my own personal instrument.
Why do you think that is?
Because I get to work directly with sound. When I notate music on paper, that's graphic art. It's not music. A score is not music.
there's like an intermediary step between you and the sound. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and there's a richness there working with other people to bring that music to life. And on the other hand, I like being able to work directly with sound. Like a sculptor wants to work with the block of wood, right? Not just draw it out on a piece of paper.
This has all the melancholy you would want in a song called Death's Thin Melody, for sure. But it has some other things, too. Like, what were those flapping sounds we were just hearing?
I think that was me just flapping a dried leaf bush somewhere out in the country.
I want to hear both you and Tim talking about, I mean, is that ability to record sounds and from the real world, from the field, and bring them into music, is that something that makes the computer an appealing instrument?
Well, for me, sometimes I'll hear something that I want to imitate, like the cicadas that we listened to earlier. And so then I you know, formulate something, a plan, to be able to recreate it.
What about you, Paul? I mean, we just heard that that's something you had done, but what does that offer that the orchestral piece of your background doesn't?
What it has to offer is the entire world as my instrument. But what it brings into my compositional suite is any sound that's made not just on our planet, but some of the space probes are sending back to us from outer space, too.
Another quality of this song we just heard was really a very powerful emotional quality. How do you infuse the sounds that come from a computer with the emotional qualities of music? I think of the way that that happens on an instrument is having so much to do with the physical human manipulation of that instrument, and that the human doing that has the emotion there. I mean, I don't know how you translate that to programming.
Yeah, that is one of the challenges, right? So when we see a performer, we see the kinetic energy that creates the sound. And when we listen to sound that's recorded, we don't have that same kinetic equation or that same kinetic prompt. So we have to build that into the music. And that's part of the artistry of working with digital music is building in that human connection, which takes a great deal of effort. But that's also the fun part of it, too.
Tim, is that something you strive to do?
Yeah, certainly. And also sometimes, like, break out of it. Because I think that, like, you know, when you write for a really long time, then you start to fall into habits. And I sometimes have to, like, limit myself and then, like, break out of the emotional quality, too. Because sometimes it just seems so distant. And then I, like, find my way back into it. And then other times I'm like, well, there's a beautiful chord. And then I just want to listen to that for 30 minutes. So I have to, like, you know, divide it and obscure it or something.
When you want to get out of what you're saying is a trap, I mean, do you see our association of music with emotion as kind of a limitation?
No, not necessarily. But I think that there's a long history of chords that are important because they're like a minor chord or a major chord or something. They have a kind of like emotional resonance that's true, but
I'm
also
give an example.
Like the D major chord progression from that Pachelbel canon. You know, it's like the graduation song. So when you hear it, it has like an emotional resonance that's totally undeniable, and yet still, I feel like it's like so easy to fall into it, you know, when you're just sitting down, you're like, wow, that's a really cool melody. And the next thing you know, it's been written 150 times.
Midwesternish is produced by Matt Hodapp and Sylvia Maria Gross, with help on this episode from Matthew Long Middleton. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you generally do that kind of thing. These stories come from a daily show on Kansas City's public radio station, KCUR 89.3. If you want to check that out, it's called Central Standard, and you can find it at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman. Thanks for listening.